you're a fan of science fiction, horror, crime noir, or dark fantasy, then you'll want to come join me at lordshaper.com/cryptographics, home of cryptographics podcasts. That's KRYPTOGRAPHIK. See you there.
You are listening to Zoom with your host, Timmy Zoom.
Zack Snyder, the director of The Watchmen, recently posted an advertisement or an announcement, whatever you want to call it, on YouTube. In it, he talks about how he and the rest of the crew, or, you know, the creative minds behind The Watchmen, had all these TV sets in the sets of the movie, The Watchmen, and they wanted to fill them with ads for Veet products. Veet is a character in the movie, a rich tycoon type character, and they was thinking, you know what we could do, we could open this up to the fans. So there's a contest with fans in the United States, and they can enter the contest by downloading some different elements from Veet products in the movie, like you know, some logos and stuff that they have already manufactured, and the fans can make mini commercials for the products in the movie, and they can be aired in the movie. And he looked so happy to be able to look down upon us fans and give us the opportunity to be in a movie. And a lot of fans on some website, it was like, yeah, that's awesome. It sucks that we outside the United States can't participate in this contest. This is going to be great. And he's like, yeah. And Zack Snyder is all, you know, full of himself on the video, like, yes, we, you know, you got the opportunity to be in this film. But what this actually is, isn't an opportunity to fan, for fans to get involved and get, have their work seen by millions. It, what it is they needed some filler stuff that a lot of these commercials that you see in movies, little fake commercials, a lot of them aren't seen much, and it's just little fodder in the movie, like, yeah, whatever, and then continue with the movie. And then it's not seen much, but they need it in there to fill up the movie and to give, make their movie seem that much cooler when you have little commercials like that. But they don't want to produce the commercials. What Zack Snyder and the movie studio probably said, or the backers said, you know what, we don't have to spend millions of dollars on making little insignificant commercials. We can get these fans, these rabid fans, to make the commercials for us for cheap. And because they know that if you look at YouTube, a lot of fans make films that are better than half the movies out there. The little fan films are, it's some great stuff. So they know that whoever they choose out of thousands of people to send in their shit, they're going to be able to pick out some hot fucking shit out of that. They're going to have stuff that looks like it's been made for $100,000 made for $800, because people are that creative and movie studios aren't. And what's the prize? What do you get? Do you get to sign a contract with them that says you get so much money for, you know, DVD sales of it because you did produce a not even act in the film, produce a piece of this movie? What do you get? $1,000. The first, the 20 commercials that they select get $1,000. The directors of those commercials, $1,000. That's it. That's all you get. Granted, I mean, keep this in mind. People who say two lines in a movie, who don't do any creative things, they're just supposedly actors, and they get a bit part in a movie, and they say two fucking lines, and don't even have to be that fucking good, they get more than that. They get $1,000 maybe for showing up and doing that, and then they get royalties on top of that. You know, 2-3 years later, they get a $300 check or something just because they said two lines or stayed on a movie set for 4 hours one day 4 years ago. But these people who they want to actually produce a mini film, a great mini film for their movie that is going to put, some of them might put almost $1,000 into it or half of that, and they get $1,000 back, and that's it. Meanwhile, they just enriched your film. And this is a case to me of taking advantage of the fans. And that's all because they know how fucking rabid these fans are. These fans, they are so into their comic book movie being made right. They are write letters. They're fanatic. So they know that these fanatics are going to make them some good movies. So, I mean, make them some good commercials and short pieces to put in their greater film. And I think I call it a ripoff. I say make your own film that doesn't have anything to do with. I say don't even make fan fiction films if you're a filmmaker, because I look at these fan fiction films and they're great. You know, the Batman versus Predator or the Batman Beyond, there was a fan fiction film for that. All that stuff is better than a lot of films out there and better than most of the superhero films. But what is it doing ultimately? You could say, yeah, DC, I'm concerned, you know, because DC, they might be looking at me for the copyrights of their characters or Spider-Man or whatever character I'm making a fan fiction film of. They're not coming after these filmmakers because what it ultimately is doing is promoting their comic book, promoting their character on YouTube. If you watch the Lobo, there's a Lobo short fan fiction film that I think is great, and it was based off of a comic. It's promoting that comic book, Lobo. You know, DC brought Lobo back, you know, like a couple of years ago in 52 because of stuff like that, because the fan generating hype around the character. So I say, all you talented filmmakers, don't make fan fiction films for Star Wars, which ultimately is making them more money. Don't make fan fiction films for any character, Marvel or DC character, and do not make a short film for The Watchmen, multi-million-dollar film that's going to make millions, and that might make millions and millions of dollars, and you get paid $1,000 for it. Make up your own. I know you got your own characters. Do your own character. Do your own franchise. You make the next Star Wars. You do the next Spider-Man. Don't put more money in their pockets. I mean, yeah, if you put more money in the studio's pockets, make sure that is because it's coming off of your franchise and that you ultimately steer the direction of it. Now, it's hard to do that nowadays, and it was easier in the 70s when nobody expected franchises to come about from up-and-coming filmmakers like George Lucas, who was smart and made sure that they gave him all the rights to his characters and toy manufacturing, right? They laughed at him because they didn't think his movie would make any money. And they lost millions upon millions of dollars because of that. yeah, George Lucas was right. And no movie company, no matter how small it or how little generation of fanfare it's got, if it's a science fiction film or a comic book film, even if it's not, sometimes you'll get action figures and merchandising belongs to film companies. So, like I said, filmmakers, don't pump them up by making film fan fiction films. Do your own shit, because we know you got the talent. And that's the Thune word of the week.
Do you love comics? Does your life insanity depend on comics? Do you sit at work and daydream about Marvel, DC, Image, Dell, Fawcett, Gold Key, Valiant, Fantagraphics, and all the rest? Are you the kind of person who wishes you could escape all responsibilities, crawl deep inside a long box, and thrill to the sequential art stories from the Golden Age to the present? Superman to Cerebus, Captain America to Watchmen, Sandman to Archie? Then come on up to the Attic, the Comic Book Attic, the show devoted to comic book news, reviews, reflections, and history, with an emphasis on comics of days gone by. In the Attic, you'll find me, Mike Pindell, talking about whatever floats my four-color boat. The Comic Book Attic, your path to comic book nirvana. But don't take my word for it. Just ask my wife.
Mostly this would be marketed to, you know, the girls in the 60s who squeal and all of their clothes match and their hair is always perfectly coiffed.
Anyway, it's a fun show, so duck the rafters, beware the cobwebs, and join me in the Comic Book Attic at comicbookattic.libsyn.com. What's in your attic?
Welcome to Thoom. This is your host, Timmy Thoom. Today's comic book that will be reviewed, Morbius the Living Vampire number 2 from 1992. Before I get started, I got to record this now. You know, I want to get as many recorded as possible, and there may be some of you may hear stuff in the background. There's some Mexican mariachi music playing next door. The Mexicans next door won't shut that shit off. They play it all day. But, you know, I can't help that I live in Mexico. I mean, Los Angeles area. So there's going to be mariachi music. But hopefully you can't hear it. I bought one of these new headphone mics. And, hey, maybe somebody can help me with this problem, too. I have a headphone mic. And I have a regular freestanding mic. Both of them USB. I have different I have six USB ports on my computer. And I'm recording on Audacity for some reason. It won't separate the tracks. Do I have to buy a mixer for that? Well, I probably am going to have to come out a mixer. Because it's like when I put both mics in, Audacity only records one or the other. And it can't figure out how to separate the tracks. But enough of that. Okay, let's get on with the story. But before we get on with that, it's time for the top five songs of the week that this comic book came out. Morbius the Living Vampire came out in what month? Oh, I guess August of 92. Top five songs of that week. Number five, November Rain by Guns N' Roses. That's funny because I hadn't heard of this song for the longest time. Like 1995, 1994 is when I first heard and paid attention to this song because of the kick-ass piano or instrumental in the middle of the song, and the video was pretty good too. Ever since then, you know, Guns N' Roses have released tons and tons of albums. They become legends because of the output that they number four song of August 15th, 1992, Baby Got Back, Sir Mix-a-Lot. It's still played to this day. It's a legendary song. I guess that's when people first noticed that black women have big asses, and they liked it. And that's you know, the beginning of acceptance of that instead of just supermodels who are super skinny. Baby Got Back. Madonna, This Used to Be My Playground, number three. It was in a movie that I never seen and never want to see called A League of Their Own. The less said about that, the better. Number two, Baby, 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 TLC. You know what? I loved this group when they first came out. But I guess, you know, looking back at it, the only hot one that I feel was hot was T-Boz. I don't see where Left Eye was hot. I don't see where Chili was hot. Chili looked like a wet rat all the time. She just had that wet hair. I hate when girls do that, put wet hair grease and shit in their hair and just let it hang and think that that's attractive. No. Okay, plus Chili looked like she had a mustache. And this group came out with a song a couple years later called Creep, which I thought was cool then until I actually listened to the lyrics. I had to read the lyrics because I couldn't understand what they were saying. But basically, the song is about, I don't know what I thought it was about, but I found out it was about a woman whose man was cheating on her. So what she did was she decided to sneak around and cheat on him with somebody else. She says, he's cheating on me, so it looks like I got to creep and cheat on him instead of breaking up with him and moving on with your life. But I guess the singer in the song says it will break his heart if she found out he's cheating on him. And I guess she can't be apart from him, so they'll be together cheating on each other. And the rapper Left Eye refused to rap on the song because that's what was happening in her relationship. she didn't want to instigate it anymore. But I say the song is all the better for Left Eye not appearing on the song. And like I said, when I look back on that group, you know, that song Creep I don't like anymore because of the lyrics. And I think that was, I think I just liked their first album was the only good thing they had. That's it. And that's where this song came off of. Baby, Baby, Baby. Number one song of the week, End of the Road by Boyz II Men. The less said about them, the better. And wow, that's a sucky list. Well, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know, I guess TLC's song wasn't that bad. Baby Got Back in November Rain isn't bad. So that's pretty good for for a top five pop list. Let's get on with a comic that I don't know how popular it was at the time. It couldn't have been that popular. I don't think this series lasted very long. It's Morbius, the Living Vampire. Morbius, you know what? This probably got props. He probably got his own title because of Morbius' guest appearance on the Spider-Man TV show, the animated Spider-Man from the 90s that sucked really horribly. Like, that's the that's the Spider-Man series where every episode that you tune in, it would be like part XXXX, you know, because they did the Roman numerals, parts XYVVI, part 17 of Xenogenic Wars. And it's like, what the fuck? Why is it like 17 numeral, you know, Roman numerals, and why is it like part 68 of a story that sucks, to be quite honest? And how come I have to come in on part 16 of this story, and it's supposed to be a cartoon, yo? People supposed to tune in, enjoy it for a half hour and leave, not have to worry about what happened in the episodes before this and why don't I understand what's going on now. That's the same show, Spider-Man, on Fox Cartoon Network that had the Punisher, where he had to wear like a bandana for some reason. It was a horrible show, man. For as many guest stars as they had on there, as many Marvel comic book heroes showed up on that show, that was a bad, I mean, the stories didn't make sense. They were, it was a mishmash of a mess. And the worst of those Spider-Man episodes were the ones featuring Morbius, the Living Vampire. I don't know why they thought that the Morbius storyline from Spider-Man was the most interesting one that they should go and, you know, and put on TV. I think it's just because the producers grew up in the late 70s and they thought the only good comics from Spider-Man was the ones they grew up with. So they put it on TV, and we see how successful that was. You know what? The best, the only good Spider-Man TV series, live action or animated, was the 1960 Ralph Bakshi Spider-Man. That's it. I can't condone any of the other ones. And even Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, even though I had fond memories of that as a child, looking back on it, it was horrible. That was bad. This story, this Morbius comic book, is kind of good. We open up with one of those old-time photographers taking pictures of a dead man in the street. You know, the crime scene photographers. But I think by 1992, I don't think they had to have giant flash bulbs on a camera like they did in the 40s. Because this guy is like flashing pictures, you know, with the thing you hold in your hand and the giant camera. And the guy, Joe Pesci, starred in a movie like that where he took crime scene photos. He played this character from the 30s and 40s, and they're doing the same thing here. But the writer and artist need to get with the times, okay? I know there wasn't digital cameras in 1992, but not for sale by the public, but come on, you don't need a big flash camera. Guy's lying dead face down in the street. The detectives are trying to figure out who the killer was. I think we know who he is. So... And they try to do a movie effect here where the cadaver or the police photographer holds up the giant flash and says to the dead body, "Say cheese, spoop." And we see the flash, and the flash cuts over to the sun. So, get it? You know, it's a flash from a camera, then a sun flash. And we see Morbius climbing down the side of the building, trying to get away from the sun because he's a vampire, and he climbs into a dark room in a building. I didn't know he can climb on walls like Spider-Man, but he's a vampire, so they could do shit like that. And he falls down. You know, he's I like, this is cool because the sun was starting to burn his skin, and it's like bacon, just, you know, smoke coming off it. That's pretty cool. He falls down. One of his friends, I don't know who this guy is, helps him. Because, you know, I didn't read. I don't know what he's coming from. You know, I don't know why he's so beat up and tired, why he barely got home. And in this panel, his friend asks if he's okay, and he says, Martine is dead. I don't know who Martine is. I don't know anything that happened in the issue before this, even though I have it. But I couldn't read that shit because, first of all, it was the first issue of Morbius the Living Vampire, but yet it was like part 7 of a story called like Sons of the Vengeance or something like that. Something to do where it was a crossover from Morbius to I think it crossed over with a comic called Sons of Vengeance, the Ghost Rider, and a couple other vampire comic books and, you know, supernatural comic books in the Marvel Universe. And I don't need that, okay? I don't need to be the first issue of Morbius to be the 7th part of another storyline. I think that sucks. So anyway, his friend carries Morbius to bed. Not a coffin, but a dark room with no windows, and leaves him there to heal and sleep. And then we go back to the detectives. You know, maybe I should have read this before. before I actually reviewed it. But this guy is like, this is, check this out. The detectives are in the precinct. One of the guys look at the picture of the dead body. You hear a whole bunch of chatter from all the cops. Somebody saying, I need a half a dozen chocolate frosted donuts. And you know what they're going to say, because cops are always eating fucking donuts. You know what? There needs to be something for cops where, you know, how cops, they can't drink on the job. They can't even off duty. They can't partake in certain activities, especially dressed in their uniform. You know, like probably go out and hang out in a strip club or something like that. I don't know. There's certain things that I know they can't do that civilians can do, but because they got to uphold their image as an officer and for the precinct. And one of those things should be your ass can't be at a donut shop hanging out eating donuts. That's bad for our image. Okay, so there's another voice bubble. These are all things that's happening in the precinct. Somebody says, so the second guy says, arrest that guy, he stole my crack, which is an old urban legend that you always hear people say. Some woman called the cops because somebody stole her crack or her drugs, or some drug dealer ripped her off, so they called the cops on the drug dealer. You know, you always hear that. I don't believe it. I think those are all urban legends. Another voice bubble from in the precinct. Riggs, Murtaugh, get in here now. So I guess that's supposed to be funny or whatever, because it's, you know, Lethal Weapon. Now's a good time for a break. It's 1992 on Zoom. Go back to Morbius. He's looking out the window into the night because it's nighttime now, and he's all healed up. He's looks like a regular man. He doesn't have that vampire face that he sometimes has, you know, except he doesn't look totally like a man because he has a white face and long claws or long nails like a, you know, like an animal. But he's, you know, he's more human now. He's got a turtleneck of some jeans. Morbius, he still talks like a vampire. See, he still has that vampire voice bubble. He says, I must drink fresh human blood or die. And then the guy says, what about the blood bank? No, the preservatives and anticoagulants are toxic in the quantities I require. To mitigate the horror of what I must do, I have chosen to prey upon the solely corrupt. So he wants to go out there, and he has to eat. He has to feed on blood. And this guy says, his friend, he says, "Did I ever tell you about my father? He used to own a liquor store in Bensonhurst. He was robbed, and they shot him in the face for $42.50. He lived on machines for a year and a half. The punks who did it were out before then." So, in other words, he doesn't have a problem with what Morbius wants to do. He says it doesn't seem like a bad idea at all. And wow, that seems like a really personal story from the writer of this, you know. But yeah, that's shit like that does happen. People get fucked up, you know, and they're good people and get shot in the face for, you know, less than $100. Even if it was $1,000 or $100,000, it wouldn't matter. So, but I like this. The guy says, you know, "I don't have a problem with you taking out bad guys. It doesn't seem like a bad idea." Then Morbius says, "That's because you aren't the one who must carry through on it." Which goes to say, maybe he regrets, you know, we're supposed to be sympathize with him, because he even feels bad for the bad guys who he has to go out and suck their blood. And his friend is like, you know, that's true. And I like this little relationship he has with his friend here. And they're talking about a serum, and how, you know, they're going to try to find a way to cure him or control it by medication. So Morbius goes out. I like this. He goes out into the night in the alleyway. We got a thief who is mugging an old man. He's a crackhead, actually. You could tell because his hair is raggled up. His clothes are ripped to shreds. He's bummy, skinny, dirty. And just like the Batman in this dark alleyway, Morbius comes out of nowhere, grabs the guy up, snatches him. And the old man who's getting robbed says, "Holy shit!" Except that, you know, he doesn't say shit. They have asterisks and, you know, pound sign and dollar sign to represent a curse word. But, you know, what else you going to say? Holy crud? And that, you know, of course he's saying holy shit. And the bad guy yells, "Ach!" And Morbius just knocks him the fuck out and says, "Run, old man. This is not for your eyes." And he tells the mugger, and I like this drawing with Morbius's face. He says, "Since you were so willing to take a life of another, you shall slake my thirst tonight." Which is that's a good slogan for Sprite or Coke or something. Slake your thirst with Coke. And the dude screaming. The dude screaming. I like this. He pulls up a gun. He has like a Uzi that he had held on a guy. It was it looks like a, you know, one of those automatic guns, machine guns. And he says, "Hey, look, I wasn't going to hurt the old dude, see?" And he pulls the trigger and it's just water coming out the gun. He says, "It only shoots water. I'm just trying to feed the monkey, you know?" And Morbius looks at his tracks on his on the guy's arms. I guess he feels sympathy because he's addicted to blood, you know, to killing human beings, you know, for addiction. And the mugger is just an addict, according to Morbius, a victim. But fuck that. You know, he's a crackhead. Okay, he ain't no fucking victim. He had a choice whether or not to be a drug dealer. But Morbius, he's going to feel sorry. "Oh, I know. Your blood is tainted with drugs. You're a slave to addiction like myself. You're ill, but you don't deserve to die. And I require somebody who does." So he gives the crackhead some money so he can go get up some more crack. If the junkie tells him the name of a seedy person so that he can go kill somebody who deserves to die. And since he's a lowly crackhead, he probably knows other lowlifes. And we find ourselves, I like this, in the seedy neighborhood. Actually, this could be Times Square because this is in 1992 before that Mayor Giuliani cleaned up New York. And most people, they say, I remember New York before Giuliani cleaned up Times Square and they put Disney store there and all that shit. It was a scummy place, but you know, it had character. I want my girls, nudity clubs and all this and that. It had character. It's like, motherfucking, you're a lie. Okay? You know, they probably thought that Times Square was a scumbag placed in. But they just, people always want something to complain about. But the place is not a scummy place like it used to be, you know, because of Giuliani. Don't hate. I wouldn't want to be walking down the fucking street and it'd be a bum every fucking 5 feet asking for money like there is in Los Angeles. You know, at least the... So it's not so bad in Los Angeles because there's places where, you know, it's so wide and spread out. There's places where there are not bums. But in New York, there's bums. There's motherfucking smoking. Everybody's on top of each other. You got to clean that place up. So I like this. The druggy on a voice boxes over this picture where we see Morbius is on the fire escape of a building and a lamp comes through the window, but it's not aimed at Morbius. Is just being thrown out the window by somebody in the room. And the druggie is like, there's this guy whose name was Nichols, name of Dick Packer. He's total dirt. 43rd and 6th. Check it out. And they get there, and Dick Packer is a brother who's a big pimp in a pimp-like suit. He looks like a beefed-up Morris Day. And he's smacking a hole. Okay, as they say. And he calls her an effing tramp. Well, he calls her a blankety-blank tramp. I wonder what he's saying. And basically, it's a case of bitch better have my money type of thing. And he said, he's thinking she's holding money out on him. She said, it ain't true, but this is, check this out. He says, he grabs her by the throat, slams her against the wall, and says, tell you what, you ain't making enough with that mouth of yours, so I'll carve you another one. Okay, that's something to have. I think this is a point in time when comics started to change. He's saying, he's saying, you ain't sucking enough dick, so I'm going to cut you a new mouth on your face, which, first of all, why would you, you know, if that's your way of making money, your product, why are you going to, like, slice her face up and make her look fucked up like that? Okay, this guy is a horrible guy, of course. He's a pimp, okay? I don't care what nobody say. Pimp is a horrible job, and I was talking about that song, It's Hard Out Here to Be a Pimp, to my roommate who liked that movie, and I said, well, you know, how come he's saying, I mean, it's hard out here to be a pimp. He's talking about pimping girls, and my roommate was, no, pimping, this is what we all got, you know, it's hard to make this money out here. We all being pimped out by people, you know, fuck that shit, you know. I don't care about what the vernacular pimp is supposed to mean. Black people, they good for shit like this. We always got to say, we're making that hustle, you know, people pimping me out, so I gotta hustle and make my money. You may work a job, or they'll say, if you're talking about somebody who's going to school, oh, she's doing that college hustle. No, she's going to school so she can get a good job, so she doesn't have to hustle. Okay. So anyway, back to the pimp. He has a knife. He's going to cut this bitch's face open, but that's the moment that Morbius comes through the window. Even though the window should have already been broken from the lamp that he threw through it. And I don't know why a pimp would throw a lamp through a window to call attention to himself even more. But he bursts through this window of this seedy place and says, I've seen enough. And the pimp's like, what the hell? Okay, now if I seen somebody jump through a window with a cape and a white face and red eyes and like fingers like talons, I would, like, you know, I would just hold back for a second, at least get a gun or something. But this pimp, he just jumps at him. Get out of here, you freak, and comes at him with the knife. And he says, do you know who I am? And this is another good picture. Morbius says, yes, you're vermin. And he grabs the guy's arm, his wrist, and he breaks the arm at the elbow the opposite way direction, just like Steven Seagal used to do. As a matter of fact, this might have been inspired by a Steven Seagal movie, because this was the heyday of Steven Seagal in 1992, when he, you know, around the time when he made all those movies about with people getting their arms broke. You know, Steven Seagal could never be beaten by anybody in the movie. He beat up 100 men in one movie all by himself, and he would always do that move where he would break your arm at the elbow, would break the back. Remember that movie used to break your arm at the elbow and snap it back in the opposite direction? That's what Morbius does here. And it's pretty fucking gross, okay? Yeah. Morbius says, I'm a predator that feeds. I am the predator who feeds on your kind. So I like this whole thing here. When the guy said, "Do you know who I am?" "Yeah, you are vermin, and I am the predator who feeds on your kind." Now that's tight. That's pretty tight. Now there's an ad in this magazine that says, "Join the Ghostwriter. Call 1-900-88-GHOST and get on the road to vengeance." And I don't know what this is about at all. And there's so much directions. There's so much text here at the bottom of this page on how you can win something. It doesn't tell you what you can win. It does. Okay, here it does. It says, no, it doesn't. It just says, it gives you like a bunch of fucking directions on how to win, but it doesn't tell you what you win. And I'm sure there's something in this humongous amount of text that they got at the bottom of this page. But this just sucks. Okay, here's a prize. All winners receive a limited edition Ghostwriter print, worthless, especially now. It's from the 90s. It's a plate signed by Andy Kubert, Joe Kubert, and Greg Wright. Worthless. In addition, a 10 grand prize winners will receive a Ghostwriter stand-up, a cardboard picture of Ghostwriter. Worthless, and not even worth the time and the money that you spend making a phone call. But I like this. Okay, getting back to Morbius. He breaks the guy's arm back, grabs his head like a child's face, and he says, "Now, welcome to the food chain." And you see just his teeth, his vampire teeth. This is fucking awesome. I love this. I fucking love this. And the hooker is standing against the wall watching all this, and you hear the sound effects from Morbius. He's sucking up the blood from and guts from the guy's throat. He's feeding on it. He's loving it. And the girl's like, "Ew." She's not feeling sadness for a pimp. She shouldn't. So at least she's smarter in that respect. Morbius is feeding on this guy, and he just looks up at the girl. Ah. I love it. And the girl asks, "Am I next?" And Morbius says, "I don't think so." And she's like, "Oh, it's cool. I got a split." She grabs her purse to get the fuck out of there. And as she's leaving, Morbius says, "Perhaps you should find a new type of employment." And she says, "Nah, I don't mind the job, just the working conditions." "You mean getting smacked by a pimp when you don't come home with enough money? Okay." That's why she's a dumbass. And she walks out the door. Click, the door shuts. I like it. I like that whole scene. That's the reason why I just reviewed this comic book. Oh, I gotta stop here. There's another ad. This is freakish. Okay, there's an ad for the Boys Town National Hotline, which I don't even like the name of that, but okay, the Boys Town. It sounds really not. This sounds creepy. The Boys Town, like a bunch of child molesters live there, and they oversee Boys Town, and it's just boys allowed. Sound like something Michael Jackson would do. Okay, but he put together. But as a matter of fact, I think Michael Jackson probably has, you know, when they was gonna sell Neverland Ranch, he probably, like, I heard he did go over to like third world country to live, and he probably got a Boys Town over there. So here's this advertisement, they call it, but it's really like a PSA for Boys Town International Hotline or National Hotline. It says, "We all must deal with the monster within." And there's a picture of the Hulk, like a really amateur's picture of the Hulk, with a picture of what could be a boy crying, but we all know is Banner, because he doesn't have a shirt on. He has brown hair, and he has his fist to his face like he's crying. And I guess that's supposed to represent all the boys, yet at the same time we know it's Banner. And it says, "We all have our own anger and pain, and keeping it inside can do a lot of damage. Call the Boys Town National Hotline and talk to someone who can help, no matter how serious your problems are." Then there's a picture, and this is the reason why I would think Boys Town is creepy, because it's called Boys Town, and here's their logo. A picture of a grown-ass man with a little boy on his back. You know how kids he's carrying a boy on his back. That's creepish. Okay, now we assume it's not, you know, a logo. In this logo, it wouldn't be a father and son, because Boy Town National Hotline, you don't need to call Boys Town National Hotline. You don't need to go to Boys Town if you have a father around, most likely. So what is this logo with a grown man holding a boy on his back? Kind of pedophilic, if you ask me. Okay, so let me read a couple of this. I might edit some of this out. Let's see here. Morbius, if you hear me saying this, I didn't edit it out. Morbius says, not he doesn't say it, but it's the narrator, and Morbius is standing in the room, with the dead guy laying on the floor. He's looking out the window at the fire escape. He says he's transfixed by horror. He understands like him, she, the hooker, does what she must to survive. What he can't grasp is that, unlike him, she doesn't care. Okay, and that's what separates him from the vermin. And also, being that she's a black hooker, this might be a comment, and he's really a white guy because he's a white vampire with a white face. Okay, it might be saying something about comment about society. These niggers don't care, but if a white person like Morbius has to do something bad to stay alive, at least he cares and he wants to do something about it. But this black bitch, she doesn't care. She has to be a hooker and suck dick for a living. He says he would have a deeper understanding of the mind of a creature from the ocean floor than he does of this one teenage girl. And he's talking about, he said, it says she seems to him of a species wholly other than human, a superior beast without conscience or susceptibility to pain, and thus better suited to thrive in this jungle. Will he become like her? And here's the little foreshadowing. A little spider comes down on a webbing next to Morbius's eyes, and we see him looking at the spider. So accustomed to, will he become like her? So accustomed to depravity that it begins to bore him. Which, come on, he sunk lower than she did. I mean, he's killing people and sucking their blood for a living. Okay, she's as nasty as it is. She's fucking a bunch of strangers for money. I mean, come on, at least she ain't killing nobody and like sucking their blood and innards out. And it says there must be another way. There is, wait. How could he have forgotten even for a second? There is a man whose radioactive blood once contributed to the remission of his disease. He is here in this city. And Morbius grabs the spider, impales it with his nail, and eats it. Spider-Man. All he must do is find him. Ha ha. Check this out. Okay, we're at the outside the door of J. Jonah Jameson, the publisher. I love that guy. I think J. Jonah Jameson is one of the greatest side characters of any comic books characters, period. Spider-Man wasn't just good just because Spider-Man's a good character. It's because he has good, good secondary characters. J. Jonah Jameson is cursing out Peter Parker. We can see the silhouettes. He's saying, "Dad blasted Parker." Parker's like, "But no, I told you already. Nobody's got any more news on this so-called vampire." And Peter's like, "But now get out of here before I sell your carcass for medical experiments." And he kicks Parker out of his office. You know what? Podcast X, who is a sister show of this, did a go to podcastx.blogspot.com. They did a show on an old Spider-Man issue number 50 from the 60 1960s, in which Peter Parker was a little teenager being cursed out by J. Jonah Jameson, and it looks like ain't nothing changed. I mean, it looks like he's more hard on Spider-Man, or Peter Parker is. It doesn't faze him as much as he did when he was a kid, but he's still getting cursed out by J. Jonah Jameson. So Parker just is thinking. He goes to the elevator and says, "What do I do? I gotta find Morbius before he kills again." And Morbius, I like this. He said, Morbius is on the roof of the Daily Bugle, and the narrator box goes like this: "How does one go about reaching Spider-Man? It ain't like you can look in the phone book and he's listed under Hero's costume. No doubt, given time, Spider-Man would seek Morbius out, but Michael Morbius ain't a patient man. Besides, he wants this meeting to happen on his terms. Therefore, the question remains how to get Spider-Man's attention." Okay, presumably Spider-Man reads the newspaper. They print his picture often enough, so how could he resist? He's on the roof of the Daily Bugle with that dead pimp, and he's dragging him across the roof in the rain, and we see the blood the streak of blood in the rain, you know, in their watery roof. Morbius lifts them above the his head and tosses them off the roof of the Daily Bugle. And he happens to land on the street in front of Peter Parker as Peter Parker is walking out the building. But not only Peter Parker is there, this street is crowded with people walking back and forth, okay, coming from work, hailing taxis. And Spider-Man is walking out with one of his friends, his female friends from work. The girl says, "I still don't know how you get all those photographs of Spider-Man." Peter Parker says, "It's just a question of being in the right place at the right time." And as he says, "at the right time," his spider sense goes off. He looks up. Oh my God. The fat pimp is flying off the roof. He almost lands on the girl. Spider-Man pulls her back, or Peter Parker says, they pulls the girl back before the guy can hit her. And you know what? As much as they try to make Morbius a sympathetic character, he's not sympathetic. He tossed a man off a building where there's on a street where there's tons of people walking past. He could have killed somebody. Okay, he ain't a good guy at all. So enough of trying to make him a sympathetic character. He's not sympathetic now. Okay, he's a potential killer. Peter Parker starts snapping pictures of the dead man, and he sees that there's a note attached to the guy's chest. "Spider-Man." It says, "Meet me where we last met tomorrow night, Morbius." And Parker says, "At least I know where to find him." And the next issue is billed as a grudge match that you've been waiting for, when in fact we've seen them tussle a billion times, especially on that damn Spider-Man cartoon. This is the end of the issue. Spider-Man is going to appear in number 3 of Morbius, the Living Vampire. Yo, see, this is the 90s. And by this time, Spider-Man has he went from appearing in the first issue of No Name Heroes, because this is what they did all the time. I have a comic book called The Human Fly, which is a Evel Knievel type character based on a real guy. And Spider-Man, it didn't have Spider-Man's name. They used to have, you know, every time somebody debuted in the comic book, Spider-Man had debut in the first issue. And Human Fly's thing about the Human Fly was, supposedly Bill Mantlo says that he had his own universe and he was outside of the Marvel Universe characters universe, when in fact in the first 5 issues Spider-Man appeared in there, Ghost Rider appeared in there, other Marvel heroes are mentioned in Human Fly's comic book Spider-Man. But to give Human Fly credit, they didn't say put Spider-Man's name on the cover at all. You have to read the comic book to find out Spider-Man is in it. By the time the 90s rolled around, they didn't want to say, okay, we're not going to use Spider-Man to sell the first issue. But they were able to hold on to the 3rd issue, as in the case of this, as in the case of She-Hulk. By issue number 3, Spider-Man was in the 1980s She-Hulk. The same thing with the new She-Hulk in the 2000s. Spider-Man always has to appear in somebody's comic to give him a boost in sales. And so that, my friends, was Morbius the Living Vampire. If you have any questions, comments, if you want to suggest a comic that I review, it better be good. Send all queries to blackpun2000@yahoo.com. That's BLACKPUN2000@yahoo.com. I'm your boy Timmy T.